Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews. A chance to sit down one-on-one with someone from the literary world. My guest today is author Mondo Frazier, who has just published his new book, The Secret Life of Barack Hussein Obama. Good morning, Mondo, and welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Maybe we could start with a little background. I know our listeners always love background. Who is Mondo Frazier?
Well, I don't, you know what? No matter what I say on that, determining who he is easier than determining who Barack Hussein Obama is. So, you know, there's not quite the mystery behind me. I'm just like yourself, just a person out there that's just banging out words every day and trying to arrive at the truth.
I have an inquiring mind. It's a really bad habit of mine. What's the story behind the moniker Mondo?
Well, you know, I used that for a long time. It was like a nickname. And that's pretty much whenever I was looking for a name that might throw off the stalkers, then I thought, you know what, I'm just going to use Mondo because that's what I'm used to.
I guess that's as good an answer as any. You know, I was expecting some story about I was in third grade and...
Well, you know what? Where I actually got the word, I don't know. I always would see it used any time there was something crazy or extreme, I would see the word Mondo attached to it. And I think that's why I first started using it, because I thought, well, I was kind of like the person who wears sunglasses to show that they're cool. It's just like shorthand.
What made you... decide to write this book? It's hardly as if you didn't have enough on your plate already. You run a very active website.
Yes, Best Buy 1,000 paper cuts, DBKP. I helped worked a little bit with the National Enquirer on the John Edwards story, and approached publishers about a book on the John Edwards scandal and the investigation behind it, and trying to do a complete story on it. And everybody liked the book, but everybody wanted to wait until the trial or any possible indictments were over and then write the story from beginning to end. But Simon & Schuster came back and said, hey, you know what? We really like what you wrote. Would you consider writing a book for us on the president, Barack Obama? And it took me all of about 4 or 5 seconds to say yes. So that's how I got it. That's how I started with it.
I've got to congratulate you on the depth of research. It would have been so easy to throw together some half-cooked piece of lunacy, you know, based on the rantings of the lunatic fringe. But that wasn't your approach at all. Did you have help with the research, or, you know, did you do it yourself?
Well, you know, a lot of the originally, a lot of the research came from articles I had already written, compiled from, oh, I don't know, anywhere from the New York Times to the Lunatic Fringe, but trying to carefully consider what everyone said and look for hard evidence. But some of the things in the book that might be new to just a casual reader, I got most of those items from the foreign press. And amazingly enough, a lot of that stuff was never printed, not even a word of it, in the United States. So, you know, sometimes people say, oh, we have the freest press in the world. Well, we certainly have the appearance of the freest press. I'm not sure about the actual the press itself. But if you go to the foreign press, there's an awful lot of things printed that don't make it into the American newspapers.
Oh, I am in total agreement with you. And I do want to come back to the press, but I want to go off on a bit of a tangent. I know our listeners are probably going, okay, so what's this stinking book about? You know, in your opinion, what are the biggest issues with the Obama story?
Well, okay, before I start on the individual issues, I do want to say one thing. It's because I keep getting this pointed out all the time. This book is full of information that people will not likely see in the official Obama biography after he leaves office. So there's just, I think, a wealth of information. It's well documented. The largest section of the book, actually, the largest chapter, is the sources part. And where I got the information from, so people can go look it up for themselves if they're not satisfied. But it's full of information that comes from that you're not going to see in the official Obama biography. And I'm trying to think of the different. Oh, I'm trying to think because people will ask me, are there any smoking guns? I'm like, you mean beyond the normal smoking guns? But yeah, I mean there's. You know what? With Barack Obama, nothing is easy. So, I mean, there's just the paper trail does not originate with the Barack Obama people is very scant. There's not much of it. And so, you know, determining who he is, you really have to find just your odds and ends facts here and there and try to piece them together. And a lot of people ask me, they say, you know, you really didn't bash Obama in this book, and I don't. I just try to present all these different bits and pieces in some sort of order and try to let the reader make up their own mind. Because I think the reader's mind, they can come up with theories that are more conspiratorial than anything I could have come up with.
Oh, I think I'll back you on that. You do not bash Obama. You merely ask questions. And
yes.
One of my favorite genres of literature is the infamous spy movie. or the spy story,
yeah.
a love Le Carre, and it's that love in some ways has spilled over into the real world. I know a number of ex-mobsters, for example.
Yeah, and, I hear them on your program.
Right. I mean, they're really nice people. But I was reading your book, and you know, there were pieces that just seemed to remind me of my ex-mobster friends, you know, that have been through the witness protection program. They don't quite have a real story that they can present. They don't have a curriculum vitae. They just have a resume.
Yes, exactly. That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, and is that how you view Obama?
Well, you know, we're told an awful lot about Obama and his background. And most of the time we're told by Obama himself in his 803 pages of autobiography. Yeah, we're told about Barack Obama from himself. But can we back it up? Not really. And where we can find the odd facts here and there, they're a lot of times clearly at odds on what we were told in those two autobiographies. For instance, he doesn't say much about when he was at Columbia or when he lived in New York City. I think a total of about a page and a half out of 803 pages. But yet, what we're told is clearly at odds with the facts, or what facts we can find. I mean, in a page and a half, Barack Obama's telling his readers in Dreams from My Father that he slept out on fire escapes, and, you know, he's clearly trying to paint a portrait that he's almost penniless, and he says he's wearing thrift store clothing at this time. But yet, if you look back in the New York City directories, the whole time he was at Columbia, and he's giving all kind of different addresses, but, you know, there's a B.H. Obama registered at the same, if not upscale, apartment. It's not in a bad neighborhood at all for a college kid. The whole entire time he was in New York City. So what is it? And then we're told he's wearing thrift store clothing, yet he can find money to fly halfway around the world to Pakistan, which is not really a vacation destination. And I mean, at the time it was under martial law. What's he doing there? Who arranged it? He stays, when he gets there, it's not like he finds a cheap place. He stays in the Le Hilton International for 2 weeks. So I don't know if they have like a Obama thrift store clothing discount or what, but he's able to afford this. And then he shows up across the country behind a gated estate, and he's with the future president and prime minister of Pakistan, and he goes bird hunting with a guy. And, you know, who arranged this? That's some of the questions I ask.
Yeah, I think those are very, very valid questions to ask.
And one thing before I forget, you know, and not only does he do all this, but then he neglects to mention any of it in Dreams from My Father, which, you know, Dreams from My Father, it's got events real, imagined, totally fictional. It's got everything but the kitchen sink in it about Barack Obama or the person that he was or wished he was or whatever, where he came from, where he might have came from. But it has nothing about this trip to Pakistan in it. Nothing. In fact, it's the president of Pakistan who reveals that Barack Obama was even there when he was 20 years old, and he went bird hunting with him. He said, oh, yeah, I went bird hunting with that dude.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it, you know.
Yeah, it makes you it makes you wonder. It makes you want to ask questions.
Oh, and you know, one more question that I forgot about that's in the book, and I keep forgetting. In fact, I forgot about this until I went back and looked through it. You know, when he was a senator in 2005, he was a newly elected senator. He went to Russia with Senator Richard Lugar on a missile inspection tour. And during the tour, at the conclusion of the tour, they went to a nuclear missile base in Siberia, in Perm. At the conclusion of the tour, Lugar and Obama are detained by the Russians for 3 hours. They want to see their passports. They want to examine and search their plane. Well, they weren't allowed to search the plane. They were not told about the passports. But then that's not talked about in the American press. That's talked about overseas, because that's where I got it, various accounts overseas. And the one account, and I believe it was an Italian news source, said that the Russians detained Obama and Lugar because they thought that Obama was a spy. And the kicker is they didn't think he was an American spy. They thought he was a British spy. And you know, you think that that's really outlandish until you consider that in 2008, Barack Obama came out on his own website, fightthesmears.com, and admitted he had dual citizenship with Great Britain. And he says up until 1982, but did the Russians know something in 2005 that we don't know in 2011? That's just another question that I ask.
But there are many, many questions. And your book, you don't slam him, but you ask the questions. Most kids, when they're in school, want to have their picture in the yearbook, but
right.
I understand that his aren't there.
No. You know, when he was at Columbia, they can't find any pictures. Okay, and what's even more incredible, Obama says, "Well, when I was at Columbia, I was in the Black Student Organization." The vice president of the Black Student Organization went on record and saying, "I didn't know the guy. I didn't know he was in there. He's not in any of the pictures. I knew everybody was in there. It wasn't like the Black Student Organization at Columbia includes hundreds of people. It's a very small group." And he said, "No, but I don't know Barack Obama."
You know, I find this somewhat disconcerting. It's one thing to say, oh, no, I don't remember Simon Barrett. But Simon Barrett isn't the president of the United States.
Right. And if Simon Barrett was the president of the United States, you would have people crawling all over themselves and saying, oh, you know what, the time that me and Simon Barrett were out drinking, or the time that me and Simon Barrett, you know, we were our car broke down.
Right.
We didn't have this with Barack Obama.
Right. I mean, you know, we're not looking for some big shocker here. You know, it's about the time we, you know, the car broke down, as you said.
Yeah.
But
there's none of it. Yeah, well, and you know what? The complete and utter lack of girlfriends who have come forward and said, oh, you know, I used to date Barack Obama. That's just now starting to get some play. And where that will lead, I'm not going to say, because I don't know.
Yeah, it just amazes me. Now, here's the big question. The press has basically zipped their mouths. Why hasn't big media picked up on the Barack Obama story?
Well, you know what? Big media, big media. I call them the corporate media stooges because they are. I mean, you know what? They don't report so much. They don't inform so much as they engage in herding that unruly animal called public opinion. You know, they're shapers of public opinion. They're not so much, if they happen to inform you along the way, well, that's an unintended consequence of the whole thing. So people who are looking to find out news from the media, you'll get the news that that's useful for the people who are giving the news out. And if you really want to know what's happening, you're going to have to sit down and do some research. And, you know, that's just too much trouble for a lot of people. So why, you know, how does Obama get a pass? The same reason that our last four presidents have gotten passes. And they constitute probably the four of the worst presidents in our history. So, you know, but you know what? As bad as the last four, including Obama, have been, people may look back on that time with whoever the next one's going to be and say, you know what? Those were the good old days.
Right. Okay. So the mainstream media is a little bit gun-shy.
Yeah.
Yeah, my theory is that It's all about advertising and stuff. So I'll just make a comment and see if you take the bait. I seem to recall a certain online journalist that broke the John Edwards scandal, but it went nowhere until the National Enquirer, of all strange people, picked it up.
Well, you know, actually, the Enquirer did, I don't want to take any of their credit. They did the investigation. They did the work. They came out with their story on John Edwards, and it went nowhere. You're right, exactly nowhere. Not one single media source in the United States had a word about it. Here's a president, here's the guy who at the time was contending for first in the Democratic primary or caucuses in Iowa. He was in some polls a front runner, and not a word, not a single word. And what we did at Death by a Thousand Paper Cuts is that we kept on the story. I think we published in about a 6-day run, we published 20 to 21 stories on it, and we stayed on it like a bulldog. And talking to the people at the Enquirer, I said, there wasn't. They go, yeah, we know no one published a word. We were shocked. We had all this money invested in all these reporters to get this, to get the facts on this, and they had pictures. They had license plates. They had everything, addresses, names, phone numbers, and not one reporter checked out anything. Not one reporter reported on anything. Now you can say that, gee, that's the irresponsibility of the media. I'm not saying that. I'll go out a little bit further on a limb and saying that's the total that's the total control of news that the media exercises, because they had a news blackout on John Edwards, everything about John Edwards that lasted 10 months. And it was the number one search term. His mistress was information on his mistress was looked for more often than any other search term on Google for 10 days in the end of December in 2007. And yet the media didn't breathe a word of it. And I just say that's how utterly compromised and controlled our corporate media is.
Well, I have a problem with big media in that they tend to hit a market and totally control it. The newspaper, the TV, the radio. You cannot get any independent news. All you get is the sanitized version that is good for profitability.
Well, you're right. I mean, I call it homogenized and pasteurized news. And I tell people, do you want to find out what really happened on a story? Go find someone local, a local TV station, a local newspaper, a local blog, in a lot of cases, who's reporting on that local news. Go find out what their first story said. And you'll find most of the stuff gets scrubbed out of the national coverage once they converge on a story. Another good place to find facts, look in the major media. If they do a lengthy story on something, go find on the second or third page of the story, go down the last half dozen paragraphs, and you will often find some gems of news that they're trying to bury. That's the best places for news in the corporate media world, the local stuff and the last paragraphs of a story.
You're somewhat cynical.
Yeah, you know what? And I used to be. I'm a recovering idealist. You know, I used to teach school, and I used to teach my kids what's in the history books. You know, that we're we're this shining city on a hill, and I firmly believed that till about 4 years ago when I started writing and having to report things and research for myself, and I found out it's anything but. And yes, that will turn you cynical.
Obviously, it is time for us to do some, commercialization, shameless commercialization. Where can people find copies of your book?
Well, if it's available on Amazon, it's available on iTunes, it's available at Barnes & Noble. Although Barnes & Noble, some people told me that they hide it down in the bottom shelf somewhere. So you may have to ask. It's at Books A Million. It was slated to be at all the Borders before they closed suddenly.
There's available. No truth in the rumor that it was your book that caused Borders to shut their doors.
I wish. I wish. But no, I tell you what, that's like people. That's a good question because people have asked me, said, do you think the president knows about your book? And I'm like, no, I don't think he cares. I don't think if he knew about it, he'd care, because if it inconvenienced him in any way, he would just sign another executive order and be done with me.
That's rather cynical.
Yeah. I am cynical.
And I know you've mentioned the website a couple of times, but where can people find you online? What is the URL?
They can find me at deathby1000papercuts.com. They can Google Death by 1000 Paper Cuts, or they can Google DBKP, or they can just Google Mondo Fraser, and they'll find us pretty quickly. As you know, we're out there.
Oh yes. what kind of reader feedback are you getting?
Well, it's almost all totally good. The people who've talked to me, and maybe the ones who think it stinks, they just don't talk to me. But people who've talked to me or sent me emails, they've all been very complimentary. They can't put it down. It's entertaining, which is what I was hoping it would be. Now, I did get one bad review somewhere, but I got to tell you, the guy who I thought it was a fictitious guy, he sent me a email and asked me a question about Frank Marshall Davis, who has a tangential role in Obama's life, or maybe more than that, depending. But he asked me how much was in the book, and I said, not very much. Well, I didn't answer him, actually, the first email, because I was getting all these emails from people that were trying to sell me information about Obama after the book came out. So I just figured he was another one, because he told me, so I have the FBI file on this, and I'm like, oh, no, I don't need this. But then he wrote me a second email, and he said, I need to know this. What do you have in the book? And I said, not very much. And so he wrote a review, and it was not very complimentary because the book was not about this Frank Marshall Davis. And I was as surprised as anyone and disappointed that it wasn't about that. And in fact, I went and reread the book again, hoping there was a couple chapters in there about the guy, but there wasn't. So, get him next time.
Who is this Frank Marshall Davis?
Well, he's a communist, a black communist agitator, and he ended up in Hawaii about the same time that Obama is supposed to be there. You know what? There's not very much proof that Obama spent a whole lot of time in Hawaii prior to him coming back from Indonesia. So, isn't he? I don't know. You've got so many pages, and you know what? You can only cover so much stuff that hasn't been covered by other people. And other people have covered Davis for what it's worth. And I mean, I got to try to put stuff in my book that you can't get other places. That's what I've tried.
No.
So.
And I have to admit that I read your book, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. I knew bits and pieces just because I happen to know you, but it was so well put together. How long did you spend doing it?
Well, thanks. Like I said, you're making me blush. Like I said, I had about 10 weeks, but some of that I had the facts put together in articles, and so I picked. I was able to start off by picking and choosing some things, but also someone got an interruption. Okay. What was the question? See how easily my train of thoughts derailed. A man comes with a package at the door, and I'm totally lose my train of thought.
No, I was asking how long it took you to put together, because it is incredibly well put together.
Well, wow, thanks again. Basically 10 weeks, but actually the first edit of the book, and it went through, counting the legal vetting, I think it went through like six or seven edits, even though a couple of them might have been minor. But the first edit, the guy took out a couple chapters, which was good. I was glad he did that. But the one chapter was almost nothing except a compilation of different weird Obama facts. So I took the best of those, or the ones I thought were the best, and sprinkled them in the other chapters, and then I thought, well, I'll have these others left over in case they want a sequel one of these days.
Right. Obviously, you're in the marketing phase right now. What is your strategy? Are you doing book signings and kind of stuff, or what?
Well, you know what? I started off doing a lot of radio. Simon Schuster arranged a lot of national radio, and I think I've got a couple today and one tomorrow, and then Tuesday the 28th I'm on G. Gordon Liddy's show. And then...
Oh, no!
Yeah! I'm hoping he'll say, "I'm G. Gordon Liddy. By the secret life of Barack Hussein Obama," like he does on the gold commercials.
Right.
But anyway, I've done a signing. I'm doing another signing the day after Thanksgiving, and I'm doing a variety of signings at Books A Million in Ohio and West Virginia in December, and I'm starting to speak at Tea Party events. So if there's anybody out there that's listening to this, whenever it's presented, and you have a tea party and you need a speaker, I'm your man. Go to Death by 1,000 Paper Cuts and send us an email.
Writing books is pretty much an addiction. It's right up there with crack cocaine. So do you have any plans for a future one?
Yeah, actually, they have the option, I think, on my next two. I have to look, but they're considering one right now, Threshold the Publisher. I've got another one that's coming out sometime in 2012. I mean, my agent would know more than I will. But it's coming out under a different name for a different reason. That's all I can say about that. From Thanksgiving until Christmas, there's still a third proposal that we need to get out. So yeah, there's a lot in the pipeline.
Mondo, my producer is whining in my ear. I need to wind this up. I want to really thank you for taking time to talk with us today. And I'm sure I speak for everyone at Blogger News in wishing you the very best with the secret life of Barack Hussein Obama.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Mondo, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'm sure we will talk again soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a great day, and we will be back again soon. Goodbye.
Oh, that-